It's time to dive into the latest news and updates from the Vegas Golden Knights. This is Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Here we go, Las Vegas, at 12 noon Pacific time in the Valley. This is Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Dan Duva, Shane Knighty with you for the next hour to talk all things National Hockey League, Stanley Cup playoffs, Vegas Golden Knights. The Stanley Cup Final continues today. Game 3 between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Dallas Stars. We'll talk all about that. We have a special guest joining us in just about 15 minutes. Mike Johnson, former NHL player and current analyst for the NHL Network and TSN. He'll join us. And from what we understand, he is inside the bubble. He is in Edmonton to cover the Stanley Cup Final. And so we'll join Mike Johnson from Edmonton in just about 15 minutes from now. Oh, good afternoon, Shane Sheriff Knighty. How are you today?
Dan, I'm doing good. It's game day.
It's game day.
You know, we got spoiled early on because we were watching games from morning till night through the beginning of this return to play, and now it seems like there's barely any games, just one every second day. It's dwindled down, but it is game day, and the series tied at one.
It feels a little bit like how during March Madness, the NCAA tournament, there's just so many games early on. Everybody's into it, especially here in Las Vegas, and I'm not sure if you have, but I remember long before the Golden Knights coming to Las Vegas for a bachelor party, specifically during the opening days of March Madness. Like, that was the reason. March Madness, come to Vegas. And that was a lot of fun. And then as it dwindles to the Final Four, the importance of the games increases, but the frequency of the games decreases, so more eyeballs are on it in a certain way, but it's a little bit strange to wait 48 hours for an NHL game when, as you said, we were having four or five games a day.
Yeah, it was great if you're a hockey fan, which we are, but now still I'm excited to watch it. I've watched both first games. It's been good, and everybody assumed it was going to be Tampa all the way. I know you and Dave touched on a lot of this yesterday. It's just the Dallas Stars are sneaky good. I think, a lot of people underestimated their ability. You look at their regular season, outside of their start to the year and then kind of the finish before the pause, they were really good. One of the better teams in the league. If you take that chunk of, I believe, is it 14 games, I think, out of the schedule. They didn't have a good start, but certainly fought back in game two, and we'll see what happens in game three tonight.
And the Tampa Bay Lightning, one of the teams that tried to figure things out in the early going of the regular season too. And I was going to say earlier this year, I mean, it's a full calendar year ago, October of 2019, because the Lightning had come off a President's Trophy, but then a first round exit in sweep form at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets. So here we are. You're right. A couple of experts, quote-unquote experts, did expect Dallas and Tampa to meet in the final. As strange as that sounds now, because of so many things that have happened through a couple of years, and Dallas winning the first game 4-1, and then Tampa responding with a game two victory of 3-2.
And Dallas, if you think about it last year, this is a team that took the Stanley Cup champions probably their toughest series in the St. Louis Blues. So they've been good for a while, and they're certainly showing it. They play a frustrating style. I think they're really good at slowing down teams in the neutral zone. Certainly we saw that firsthand with the Golden Knights. And then really collapsing in front of the net. They've got a goalie that has just an unreal amount of confidence right now in Anton Khudobin. You have to get to him. I think special teams were going to be key if you want to beat the Stars, especially when you have a power play like Tampa. And Dallas certainly didn't help themselves. They did exactly what the game plan wouldn't call for, and that's taking a lot of penalties early, falling behind, and then playing the chase game.
And obviously Tampa with a couple of power play goals. They made some tweaks to score a couple on the man advantage. They had gone without a power play goal for several games. Now, I wanted to ask you this, Shane. We touched on the schedule and how it's – now there are fewer games per day, obviously, as you get to the Stanley Cup Final. But – The thing that I remember about the Golden Knights run in the Stanley Cup Final a couple of years ago was how much it was stretched out. You're talking multiple days between series, between the conference final and the start of the Cup Final. All the theatrics of the media day and all the hype and everything. And then you play a couple of games in Vegas, and then you've got 2 days in between games two and three for the travel. That is not the case. They're trying to get this done as quick as possible. So they go just 1 day in between series, no games. I mean, they're going to have the possibility of a back-to-back if they go Friday, Saturday. And we've seen back-to-backs all throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. Has that had a measurable impact for either of these teams, Tampa? Because Tampa had a break going into the Islanders series. Yeah. The Islanders didn't. Dallas, because the type of game that they play, maybe I'm curious what you think about how it's affected these two teams.
Well, I think it affects – I don't know if in series as between series.
Right, yeah.
I think that's where it's beneficial to get an extra couple days like the Stars had before the start of the final here.
Exactly.
I think that certainly helps the team. Guys, you know, every team has guys that have injuries at this point. And they're playing through it. You know, Braden Point, I'm sure, would have loved an extra couple days. They would have loved a couple extra days for Steven Stamkos. The biggest difference in series is there's no travel. So usually you're traveling from West Coast to East Coast or West to East in some fashion. So there's a couple days usually between, you know, games, between game 2 and 3 and game 4 and 5. And then, you know, depending on where it goes from there, just for travel. They allow an extra day for travel. Now they don't need to worry about travel. I'm fine with a day between. I'm not crazy about a back-to-back in a Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, the thing that I remember talking to Pete DeBoer about this during the conference final for the Knights, the importance of clearing your head after a game and how hard that must be. You talk about back-to-back, but when you're changing cities, whether it is, you know, the team that's up a game, down a game, whatever it is, yeah, the importance of having that extra day to physically put yourself in a different location to help, you know, reset mentally.
Well, and then the fan element comes
right
in.
Well,
that's why it's such a unique conversation to have. It's a great one to have, but we really don't know. We've never seen this. This is a blank canvas, and you know we're hearing it more as guys have come back talking about, you know, being in this experience, being in the bubble, what it was like, you know, for everybody, whether it's players, whether it's staff. And there's certainly more challenges, and there's some things that I think make it a little bit easier. Maybe to reset, as you said, there, you know, instead of that travel, hopping on a plane, flying, you know, up to 5-6 hours if you're going from one side to the other, depending on where these cities are at, you know, Washington to Vegas isn't a close proximity. That's a long flight.
But and a lot more humid in Washington, D.C. Oh, my
exactly.
God. I remember getting off the plane, and it felt like walking into a sauna.
It went from dry heat to, yeah, it was, I remember I actually did a thing on the NHL Network outside with Kevin Weeks, and I sweat. I had to ask for a towel because I was on that stage just... It looked like I just ran 2 miles. Well, maybe let's say 5 miles. 2 miles, I still get pretty sweaty. But yeah.
And there was some rain while we were in D.C. too, and we're not used to that here. I think that it's more than 150 days since we've had precipitation in Las Vegas. Right. And I remember having to walk through Georgetown with an umbrella.
Yes, you had the kid's umbrella, Dan. That was one of my favorite pictures. We all got normal size. Dan got the baby umbrella.
Umbrellas, you know, in different restaurants and pubs, there would be, you know, these community umbrellas, a big, you know, stack of them. And so you would just grab one on your way walking out of a
place.
Did
yours have butterflies on it or anything?
And so you're not looking at it, right? You figure they're all the same. So I just grab one. We walk outside into the rain. Everybody puts up their umbrella. I could have put mine in a cocktail. It was so small. It did the job well enough, and we survived. But I do remember outside of the arena going on one of the NHL shows and all the fans trying to huddle underneath the awnings because of the rain. Anyhow, there's no rain in the forecast here in Las Vegas today. It'll be about 100 degrees, as is usual. Mike Johnson coming up. There is the NHL with the continuation of the Stanley Cup playoffs here today. Also, the awards that came out a couple of days ago, Shane. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But I since you brought up the bubble, I did want to ask you if you had a chance to read a piece from ESPN. Emily Kaplan put together anonymous comments from players who were inside the bubble, and if anything jumped out at you from those comments about the guys who experienced the bubble for weeks on end.
I don't know if there's anything that jumps out. You know, surprise. Everybody's going to take away a different experience, right? That plays to the individual. You know, more talking to a lot of people that were in there. Some people said they enjoyed it. Some people, it wasn't as much fun. Depending on, you know, are you a single man? Do you have family? What are you missing on the outside? Some guys love to be in the hotels. I was a guy that enjoyed traveling. I enjoyed being in a hotel, being with the guys as much as possible, spending that quality time. Although, at 52 days with them, it could get a little heated at times.
Yeah, there were some things that were interesting because, hey, it's a pandemic. This has never been done before. A lot of credit to the NHL, first and foremost, keeping everybody healthy. Yeah. Number two.
Well, that was number one.
Right. Allowing the hockey to continue without interruption. I mean, they're going to hand out a Stanley Cup in a few days. I mean, that in itself is an achievement this year. And the safety factor, whether it was from the virus or for something else, they all felt safe. Now, there were maybe some things that had been promised in terms of amenities that did not quite play out. But all of that to me is secondary because the goal here was to finish the season.
And I think that's what the majority of the players, at least the ones that went the furthest, and I knew this was going to be a factor, the players that had the right mindset heading in. You had to have hockey first and foremost mindset. And we talked, I remember before the return to play started, before they got to the bubbles, we felt the teams that were most prepared to go in there with that type of attitude and set up as a group individually and collectively as a team and came out of the gate ready to play would be the teams that went the furthest. And that's why we maybe saw some surprises early on. The Edmonton Oilers, they were at home, mind you. They had to drive to the bubble. But still, there were some people, some teams that weren't ready. And if you weren't, came out quick, you had to go in there with the right mindset. Just as much as important to be physically ready to go in this type of competition, mentally, the toughness had to be at the top.
Yeah, an interesting piece from Emily Kaplan. It's she's on Twitter, at Emily Kaplan. Emily M. Kaplan, I should say. She's a hockey writer for ESPN, having interviewed several players who offered their thoughts anonymously. So you get as close to a true sense of what was going on in the bubble as probably anything else. Listen, guys aren't going to go out and complain. They're in
and
the
it's remarkable what the NHL did.
Yeah, exactly.
Incredible what they were able to do in a short period of time.
Couldn't help but think of the line, a poor man wants to be rich, a rich man wants to be king, and a king ain't satisfied until he rules everything. And, hey, this has worked out pretty well. Sure, there's room to quibble, but it is amazing that they have accomplished what they have accomplished with still zero positive virus
tests.
That's
right there. That's... So whatever complaints there were, the major factor was safety and to make sure they didn't get cases. And that was taken care of. So everything else is kind of, just little things to quibble about, as you said.
Interesting to read, but I think that point is worth reasserting that this is, in a few days, this is going to be mission accomplished. Okay, we're going to take a timeout. And speaking of the bubble, we're going to go to the bubble. Mike Johnson, analyst from the NHL Network and TSN, former NHL player, of course, will be joining us when we come back on Fox Sports Radio.
We're back to Nighttime at Noon on your home for the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Welcome back, everybody. Dan Duva, Shane Knighty. We continue along Nighttime at Noon. It is 12:16 Pacific time. Glad you could join us. Stanley Cup Final on tap. Game 3 is this evening, 5 o'clock Pacific time. The series is tied one game apiece. Dallas, a 4-1 victory in Game 1. Tampa Bay, a 3-2 victory in Game 2. And again, Game 3 is this evening in the Edmonton bubble. Pleased to be joined now by NHL analyst, former NHL player from the NHL Network and TSN. It's Mike Johnson. Mike, Dan Duva, Shane Knighty here in Vegas. How are you?
Good afternoon, guys. Greetings from not quite inside the bubble, as you guys are well aware what that was like, but from the periphery of the bubble. I'm in and out of the rink and heading over for game 3 today. And interesting to see these games, Stanley Cup final in a rink with no stands. Probably stranger for the viewers, which is almost exclusively media, than it would be for the players at this point. But it's still cool to be here when the Stanley Cup's on the line.
Hey, that's a great point, Mike. Thanks for joining us. You've been watching from the outside. Now that you're there, what is the strangest thing? Just maybe hearing everything clearly from the ice?
The strangest thing for me, like watching at home, as you guys are kind of getting used to now, it feels quite normal now.
Yes.
You hear the sounds. It looks the same. You're used to the banners and the tarps and the different lighting and the screens in the crowd. It all feels normal. But being there, especially for warm-up and for pregame, nights, it brings me back to like when I played in Tampa and Arizona in the middle of nowhere in your exhibition game, and there's like a couple hundred people in the stands and not much going on, and there's no atmosphere. It's just so strange. But once the game starts and the guy, whoever's on the computer with the in-house sound system, he's really quite on it. Every ooh and ah is right on cue and not too loud and not too quiet, and the players are certainly playing like it's normal. But yeah, being able to hear the sounds and being able to hear the communication and how much it would be a great lesson for any young athlete to like get to this point. You listen to the best players playing for the biggest prize and see how much they talk. The communication on the ice is so loud and clear when nothing else is going on. It's been it's almost refreshing to hear it.
Mike, you know, we were just talking about the lack of travel here, the lack of days between series, between games, whether in your experience or your sense of how it's affected the lack of travel. And obviously, Tampa had to come from Toronto for the conference mm-hmm. final. What do you make of all that?
Well, it's a great equalizer among series. I mean, I know Tampa had to get out here, but they beat the Islanders out by a couple of days, and it actually probably worked in their favor. You know, some teams on the West Coast, I mean, they could be flying, you know, multiple hours, multiple time zone. You're going from you know, L.A. to Chicago. That's a pretty good flight. That's not Boston to Philly. And over the course of three rounds, that does add up. So I think everything about this platform is a great equalizer. The lack of travel, the no home ice, the no crowd. I mean, Vegas has one of the best crowds in the league already, and they don't get to use that. They don't get the benefit from being a really good regular season team as compared to a team they're going up against that wasn't quite as good. So I think everything about the setup has been something that has leveled the playing field. And I know the players, when you get around them or you talk to them or communicate with them, while it is strange to not have more days, and we're going to have tonight starts 3-4 in the Stanley Cup final, which seems unheard of, they're also aware that they want to get out of here. Like they want to win. They're playing as hard as they possibly can, but they also want this to be over. They want to be able to go back to their families, go back to their homes, their cities, and return to the world outside of their little bubble, which these guys will be in for, what, almost up to 10 weeks, almost 9 weeks by the time it's all said and done. So they probably appreciate the lack of days off and the back-to-backs because, you know, they're anxious to play and they don't want to wait around anymore.
Well, Mike, I wanted to go to you for your professionalism right now. You're analysis is, you know, we've watched the Dallas Stars. I maybe watch it a little different because we watched them playing the Golden Knights. You watch more for what the Golden Knights weren't doing because we talk primarily about them. But now you've seen up against Tampa, and everybody just assumed Tampa would come in. But the way Dallas is able to slow them down in the neutral zone, and you know, this team, I think now we got to recognize they're scary good. You know, outside of their, and I was telling Dan earlier, outside of their first 7-8 games of the season and maybe their last six, you know, before the pause, they were one of the better teams when you look at their record, and they're certainly showing it now. They look, you know, dialed in. I know that they got in trouble with penalties, but other than that, they have not given much to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Nope, they don't give you anything 5-on-5, do they? And that's what Vegas bumped into as well. And where Dallas is so interesting is that they will concede some possession and shots from the spots that they want you to shoot from. They won't concede shots from the spots that you want to get to, and that's what Vegas ran into. And I know Hudobin was, you know, beyond excellent, but even Tampa, they put up the first game, they put up, what, 22 shots in the third period alone, but only like three or four were from that high danger area. Everything else is from the outside, and that's what Dallas does. And neither the defense, when you could appreciate how organized they stay in their own end. It's not about, you know, can you get to your structure? Most teams, you get back in your own end. Everyone gets in the right spots. They understand their assignments. But can you keep that structure? Can you keep your assignments and your discipline 20 seconds in, 30 seconds in, when you're tired, when there's switches, when they deactivate? Can you sort it all out properly? And you watch Dallas play on their own end, and they almost always do. It's amazing how good they are at their D-zone coverage and keeping everything to the outside and away from those high-danger areas. And then you watch them up ice, and Rick Bonus has talked about it, you know, getting in on the forecheck, disrupting with their three forwards, not having to activate their defensemen on pinches very often, so that's a lower risk style of play. They always have their defensemen back, being good in the neutral zone, bodies back, no odd man rushes. They do all these things, all the layers that you need to limit other teams' good chances. They do it and do it so consistently that you don't ever get an easy one. You don't ever get a breakdown. Lines 1-4, they all play the same way. And then if you somehow manage to break through all that, Then you got this, you know, 34-year-old goaltender, career backup, who's played for 13 teams in 12 leagues, and he's playing better than maybe he ever has an entire life. So put all that together, and you have a tough puzzle to solve 5-on-5.
Well, it's like, I remember watching game one of this series. I'm like, I felt like I was watching a rerun of a movie I'd seen, just watched five times in a row. But that, and you're exactly right. I mean, another point to that is because it reminded me kind of, you know, when I played in Boston, even Ottawa in the early 2000s, which was more of a trap era, but it was easy to play defense because you did. But I think one of the big factors, especially Boston, is when you have confidence in a goaltender, which I think the Dallas Stars do right now. You'll give up those shots more easily now than running out of position because you have that trust.
Yeah, if they're never going to go in, then you can concede the 35-footer from outside and box out and be strong around the net and clear rebounds. And you don't have to go diving out to block shots. You don't have to, you know, do anything more than what you are required to do. Don't pull yourself out of position in an effort to protect your goalie because he is protecting you every single time. And even sometimes when he shouldn't, he's making some saves. And you're right, it's amazing. Whatever kind of team you are, whatever kind of style you play, how much confidence a good goalie can give a group to play on their toes, to be more assertive, to be more confident in what they're trying to do with the puck, let alone what they're doing without it. And Hudobin is definitely giving that to Dallas.
You know, and Mike Johnson is our guest from the NHL Network and TSN. Dan Duva, Shane Knighty here for Nighttime at Noon. You know, it's not just on that end of the ice. Mike, are you at all amazed? You've got Haskinen, you've got Klingberg, you've got Oleksiak on the Dallas side, you've got Victor Hedman on the Lightning side. I mean, these are not guys only playing well defensively. You're talking about some of the leading scorers in the Stanley Cup playoffs with these guys.
Yeah, I hate it. Shane loves it, but it's a defensive-dominated series, right? I mean, like, you're right. The best players throughout most of these playoffs have in large part been the defensive for these teams. But it speaks to the new era of NHL defense. And now Victor Hedman would be at the forefront of that movement. But, you know, guys who can defend, maybe not quite as physically. They're not about running you through the wall. They're about positioning, defending you with their feet, getting in the right spots, and then taking advantage of your aggressiveness on offense to make you pay going the other way. They beat you back up the ice. They create, you know, 4-on-3s and 3-on-2s and 2-on-1s. And I almost chuckle. I'm watching Jamie Oleksiak jumping in the rush, and he's in on breakaways. I'm like, where has this guy been? Who does this guy think he is jumping up like this? But when you see everyone doing it and you are empowered by your coach to go, you see Joel Hanley jumping in. Joel Hanley's never scored an NHL goal before. He opens the Stanley Cup final scoring because he's jumping in because he sees a seam. Everyone on both teams, Chernak, Shattenkirk, Bogosian, Luke Shen, any defenseman that sees a gap, a seam, an opportunity, they all have the green light to go because they trust that they will have support in behind them and that the guys with the pucks will make the right plays because they're available. So it's a big part of both teams and what they're trying to do to create offense.
I love it. I love that they got green light. And you mentioned the confidence of the coach. Rick Bowness, I remember talking, he said Jamie Oleksiak, you know, coming out of phase 3 or 4, what felt was their best defenseman heading into the bubble. And he certainly played well. The guy at 6'7" that can jump into the rush like that. And, you know, everybody getting the green light. I remember in the early 2000s, Jacques Martin, if I went to the top of the circles from the blue line, like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Easy there, back. But, yeah, it's tremendous. Maybe one last one here for you, Mike, is you kind of look at this series. What do you think what does Tampa Bay need to do? This team's been good for so long. What do you think you need to see maybe more from them? And I know Dallas, they'd love to get more out of Sagan, but maybe what Tampa can you get from them tonight to put the give them the edge?
I think what Tampa needs as much as anything is you know, patience, which I think they've shown. They've shown maturity and patience compared to last year, where they will stay with their game plan, not get frustrated. But, you know, their second line right now, Lorne, Sorelli, Tyler Johnson, they've not been bad, but they've not really been difference makers. Now, Sorelli's jumped in. He had the overtime series winner. You know, he's had a couple moments, but I just think, you know, for Tampa to kind of get that snowball rolling down the hill feeling where they can roll their top three lines and let them go, and you feel like you're kind of under attack shift after shift, wave after wave, I think that second line has got to find another gear and try to find some open ice and pucks in and around the net just to build on what the first line has done. And the third line has been really good as well. So to me, that's the biggest difference. And that comes with a caveat that their captain, Steven Stamkos. The biggest story in this final so far is almost not what's going on the ice. It's when is the captain coming back? It seems like it's not a question of if, but only when. And this morning, now you can put on your inspector hat, your detective hat, to this, because so Stamkos has not been playing forever. They have an optional morning skate, Shane, and he did not go on the ice for it.
Very interesting.
Now, either he had a setback or something's going on here, because there'd be no reason why he wouldn't take that 15, 20-minute skate, especially if he's trying to get in shape to at some point get in the lineup. So we shall see for warm-up. John Cooper keeps teasing that it's close. I wonder if it's so close that it's tonight or if they pushed it another day. But maybe Stamkos, to tie it all back together, getting in the lineup, maybe him spot duty on that second line gives them a little bit more of an offensive punch that I think they will need to finish off this series.
Well, that's really something, Mike. I mean, you know, you've got one of the best players in franchise history there, but as you point out, like, he hasn't played a game in a while. If it was anybody else, I wonder, you think twice about putting somebody into the lineup, but it's Steven Stamkos.
Yeah, you don't worry. Well, one, he did this a couple years ago. He missed a whole bunch of time.
Right. He's missed a lot of time.
And he came back and played a game seven and was okay. Also, they play, Tampa does, 11 forwards and 7 defense.
Yeah.
So they could put Stamkos in as a 12th forward, play their 6D, and if it doesn't work out, then just play 11 forwards. Like, they're used to that. They wouldn't really disrupt their rhythm that much. And if you can't play very much 5-on-5, then sit them on the left wing circle and let them take one-timers on the power play, or at least be a decoy of the one-timer. And I think that would also be a benefit, even if he's not quite up to game speed. But, you know, he's been a great, all-time best goal scorer in the last 10, 15 years. And so the threat of his shot alone is enough to get the other team's attention.
Yeah, no doubt. And then you saw, you know, Kucherov, a little bit different look, finding himself in front of the net, assisting on both of the power play goals last game. And Point and Palat scoring them, of course, and it was 3-0 at the end of the first, and they held on for a 3-2 win. Mike Johnson, thanks so much for spending some time with us here. We are jealous, I have to admit. We wish we were there.
Thanks, MJ.
Talking about the Golden Knights and the Tampa Bay Lightning, but we appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I wish you were here, too, because there's aside from the games, there's not all that much going on.
I'm sure you'll make the most of it.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll find something or somewhere to sit.
Well, I'll figure something out, Shane. You know me.
I have all the faith in the world.
There you go.
Enjoy it.
Right,
thanks,
guys.
Mike. That is Mike Johnson, a one-time member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. That was prior to their Stanley Cup championship in 2004. But Mike Johnson now at the NHL Network and TSN. And Shane, a colleague of yours, covered the Jets for a bit, right?
Well, and he was really good to me. He'd been in the business doing working games of what I do. And when I started out on radio as an analyst, he was doing the Winnipeg Jets. He'd fly in from Toronto and do the TV ones. So I was able to learn a lot from him when I first started in the business.
A really interesting and thoughtful guy. Appreciate that from Mike Johnson. We'll take a timeout. Lots to touch on and follow up on some things that Mike talked about there. I want to talk to Shane about all these defensemen getting involved. We will get into more of that. The Norris Trophy and something that doesn't currently exist but probably should, a Bobby Orr Trophy. Cup, award, something. That's coming up. First, we invite you to check out VGK Worldwide. You can join other Golden Knights fans around the world with VGK Worldwide, the official global fan club of the Golden Knights. Become a premium member by visiting VGKWorldwide.com and purchasing your kit today. Premium members receive access to exclusive merchandise, exciting contests, and specialized content. Don't miss this opportunity to be part of Painting the Globe Gold. It's VGKWorldwide.com. We'll be right back on Fox Sports Radio.
Live from City National Arena, this is Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
It is 12:35 Pacific Time. And you wouldn't normally associate the Boys of Summer with the Stanley Cup Final. But as Don Henley would sing there in a moment, the Boys of Summer are
great
almost
song.
Gone here, Shane. Can you believe it? Hockey season is days away from finishing.
When it's usually just starting.
Right.
Like we're just we're hitting preseason right now, getting ready for the regular season to begin in October, which I had been a part of for the last – that would have been my schedule for the last 20-some years between playing and broadcasting.
Oh, jeez.
And now, yeah, we're talking about the Stanley Cup Final coming up here as October nears.
Oh, boy. Were you – 99-2000, where were you with that season?
That was my last year of the minors, so I was with I would have been with the Cincinnati Mighty Ducks, I believe.
Cincinnati Mighty Ducks. And I asked that because that was the first time I ever tried to call a hockey game. And I have a micro cassette tape of a New Jersey Devils Ottawa Senators game. And I have
next
it somewhere.
Next year I would have been
next
there.
Year, right? That's why I asked. I wasn't sure. So that's... You know, that's a long time
but
ago.
But still in the minors, I was with the same schedule.
Yeah. Right. No, I just – and I remember going to the Meadowlands and just thinking, boy, the Devils, you know, they ultimately won the Stanley Cup that year, but they had all these great teams and just a really special feeling about going into the rink in October. Because that's where I was about to broadcast my high school's hockey games, but high school hockey didn't start till like November or whatever.
A little later.
So going into the rink in October, it was still high school football season, but I can remember being so excited for hockey as a kid growing up in Jersey, and the Devils had won it in 95 and then didn't make it, but then they got good again and so on and so on. And I wanted to ask about defensemen, because among the defensemen that had Conn Smythe caliber postseasons for the Devils, Scott Stevens, Scott Niedermeyer, though Niedermeyer did it later with the Ducks. He was on those teams anyway. You've got a lot more defensemen in the mix for the Conn Smythe conversation than normal. But in general, you got more defensemen in the Conn Smythe conversation as compared to the Hart Trophy. And, you know, you've got to go back like Pronger. Okay, yep. But you go back to like Bobby Orr, like normally the NHL MVP is not a defenseman.
Yeah, no.
But in the playoffs, it seems more likely.
Duncan Keith
won it 5 years ago. You're looking at more frequently defensemen in the Conn Smythe conversation than in the regular season MVP conversation. And I've been wondering why that is. Why do you think? I've been curious to know your thoughts on
that. The position has evolved. Yeah, I think you've got a lot more skilled defensemen, and that's part of the whole game of hockey. The mentality of hockey, you know, is a defenseman, and I know I was joking about the Trappers. You mentioned a guy like Scott Stevens, you know, and it was, they were big, they were tough. You move the puck, you put it off the glass and out. You had maybe one guy, one defenseman that was offensive that could jump into the rush. And then you rarely had the guys, you know, the special ones that could do it at both ends. It was, you know, it was a certain amount of them in the league that were great at both ends of the ice. That's why the Norris Trophy was so much easier to hand out. There was a guy that stood, you know, ahead above the rest because he was good at both ends of the ice. Now, well, the talent pool is so much larger because the position's evolved, the style of play has evolved, defensemen are encouraged. We just talked to Mike Johnson about, you're seeing it now, everyone, regardless if you're considered an offensive D-man or not, you're encouraged, given the green light, if you pick the right time to join the rush, to be active on the offensive side of the puck. That has not always been the case. And because of it, you're seeing, you know, some guys are, you know, to one point where they're all offensive. And then, you know, you still have your guys that are really good defensive that can chip in offense. You've got different, but the skill level, just like every position has picked up. But I think you're seeing it more from a defensive perspective because the style has changed. Teams want to generate offense now, and a lot of that has to come from we call it the second wave or the addition of the D up in the play, or even the way you see a cycle. Used to be a three-man forward cycle. Now you activate your D down the wall, the interchange in the offensive end. All those things have changed so much.
I mentioned 99-2000. I mentioned Chris Pronger. He is the last defenseman to win the Hart, the MVP. And prior to that, the last defenseman prior to 2000 and Chris Pronger was Bobby Orr in 1972. That's a long time with very few defensemen considered for the MVP. And then we mentioned Duncan Keith 5 years ago winning the Conn Smythe for the playoffs MVP. And there have been others. I mentioned Niedermeyer, mentioned Scott Stevens and Nick Lindstrom, of course, with Detroit on the Norris side. So that's where I wanted to go with this, Shane. On the Norris, that is an award that recognizes defensemen. And it has turned into some kind of odd
Like
point race.
It's a point race, right? It has turned into the defenseman who scores the most, basically, which I'm not sure is really what it ought to be. And you have strong feelings on
this. I certainly do. And I think this maybe why is because I think a lot of it really kind of changed when I retired from playing and got into this job where I pay probably more attention to it because you see more of the players you analyze. Obviously, when you play, you have an opinion of who you think is the best defenseman. But, you know, the fact that Shea Weber hasn't won it is outstanding to me in years because, you know, there was guys, Erik Karlsson put up huge points. Brent Burns put up huge points. And they are elite defensemen, offensive defensemen. Are they guys I want on the ice in the last minute holding a 1-0 lead? No.
No.
I do not at all. And that, to me, is where the conversation it needs to change. If you want to talk about the best all-around defenseman for the Norris, fine. And that's where you mention it. Let's get another trophy for, okay, John Karlsson had a crazy year this year. Great year offensively. I think they got it right. I think Roman Josi's the better all-around guy.
I was
going to
ask you about that. What do you think about
it? I believe this year they got it right. Yeah. Roman Josi, to me, this past season, you know, Victor Hedman, to me, still the number one defenseman.
Who won it 2 years ago.
But Josi had that type. If it wasn't for him, Nashville, they had nothing going. He carried that. He could have been, to me, he was heart kind of caliber season for him and what he did for that organization, for his team. So now they need to find it. And I think a Bobby Orr trophy is perfect. I think the time is right because we are preaching offense. Everybody's cheering for offense in the National Hockey League. And the players now that are developing in a young level, offensive D-men, they are talented. They're skilled. Look no further than what we saw this year. Saw Cale Makar, Quinn Hughes. They had a Calder race. Makar wins it. They're phenomenal. Heiskanen in Dallas. Shea Theodore, who finished sixth in Norris voting. Pretty impressive.
And that's his second half of the season.
And he was second only who since December in D scoring? Roman Josi.
Yeah.
Since, I think, December 13th.
Yeah.
So, and it's great. And I think you're only going to see those numbers rise for certain players. But are they that reliable defensively? If they are, great, they get the Norris. But you could also look at it who's, let's not take away, other styles of game. Maybe a guy is a 30 to 40 point defenseman, but he leads in block shots, time on ice. We're in analytics league now. It's getting more and more. Who's his ice time again? Who takes the most defensive zone draws against the other team's best players? You can start looking at a lot of other factors here that could play in to maybe more than Norris is a defensive-minded, and then you have another one that's strictly for who's going to win the D-scoring race.
Right. Bobby Orr has the record for the most Norris trophies.
Norris trophies.
8 in a row.
What was Lindstrom?
7.
Seven.
Doug Harvey also had 7. Ray Bourque had 5. Chelios had 3.
I played
3,
a lot of games in those Lidstrom years, so it wasn't even much of a conversation.
Yeah.
I would have went over and handed it to him after playing against him.
And Bobby Orr would have won a lot more if not for the injuries that cut his career far shorter than it would have been. But, he's putting up over 100 points every year. It's a very different game in the 70s, but he was playing sort of a modern game in the 1970s. I mean, just incredible if you go back and watch some of that tape. It's before our time, obviously, but Bobby Orr would be the guy, and I think it's a great idea. There are enough awards to recognize the guys who skate up front.
Do they have a defensive forward award?
The Selke.
And then they have the point award.
And you know what's interesting also with the Selke?
So why wouldn't you have an offensive D-man award for a defenseman?
Right, and like the Selke, to me, it's like Sean Couturier wins it this year, and he's – it's really not the best defensive forward. It's the best two-way forward is what it's turned into. Because Couturier, as good as he might be defensively, is he the best defensive forward? He gets that award because he's also very good offensively, and you kind of you weigh both ends of the ice, I think. And that's really, I don't know. It's evolved. That's the way it is. And a lot of people vote for these things who are not me. So that's sort of the way it is. So Bobby Orr. Award that we'll send that letter to the commissioner.
Yes, let's get on that.
So you think if this year had the Bobby Orr Award existed, you would have gone with John Karlsson?
Well, whoever has the most points.
But you think Roman Josi was a deserving Norris?
But maybe you'd look at that one a little different too. It's now we're I don't know if we have enough time to get in. Is it strictly the guy who gets the most points, or is it the best offensive guy, and then you look at the best defensive guy?
Yeah,
or is the Norris still
to...
kind of be a mix, and then you just standard give
question.
It to the guy who gets the most points as a D-man?
It's a good question. I mean, there are plenty of famous hockey people. They wouldn't run out of names for trophies, but, yeah, that's a good question. Let me ask you this, though, because when it comes to numbers, like sometimes, okay, whoever gets the most goals, Richard, right? Like, there's no debate. Like, it's just whoever has the most.
I think it should be most points if they're going to do it.
And that's the tricky thing, because when you look at some of these awards, defensemen as compared to forwards, judging them based on statistics is more difficult, right? A forward, you could just kind of go with the numbers. And I said this to Dave yesterday, Shane, talking to a broadcaster who covers an Eastern Conference team. During this playoffs, not back in the spring, during the playoffs, asked me about the Golden Knights' top line of Pacioretty, Stastny, and Stone. That line has not played together in a long time. Another person made reference to the Golden Knights' defense and how there's not a Norris candidate on the Golden Knights' D-core. And I wanted to, well, Shea Theodore is going to be like. My point is, people who are voting for these awards who work in the league do not see all of the games. A lot of what they know about a team not in their division is based on numbers or seeing highlights. And it's to me, it's hard to get some of these things right. Do you go by numbers? Do you go by the eye test?
It's been a debate going on for years now.
That's what's going to frustrate me for years to come, I'm sure.
Get used to it.
We've got to take a timeout. First, a word from our team stores, exclusive Golden Knights gear at each of the Golden Knights team store locations, the Armory at T-Mobile Arena, the Arsenal at City National Arena, and you can also get your Golden Knights gear online at VegasTeamStore.com. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Fox Sports Las Vegas.
We're back to Nighttime at Noon on your home for the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Las Vegas.
12:50 Pacific time. Dan Duva, Shane Knighty here for Nighttime at Noon, wrapping it up. Thanks again to Mike Johnson for joining us. And all of these broadcasts are available on our website, so you'll want to check that out if you want to listen to previous shows, interviews, etc. And as a matter of previewing, tomorrow it'll be Darren and Gary on Nighttime at Noon. So Darren Millard, of course, each day with Ryan Wallace, 4 to 6, the Vegas Golden Knights Insiders Show. Tomorrow you get Darren and Gary Lawless, the lawman, talking with Darren tomorrow in this time slot. So we.
I took his position today. That's your guy, you and Gary.
Well, I took your spot yesterday with Dave.
Oh, boy, I pity you. That See, I'm glad everybody else gets to experience it, too.
Well, it worked out well because we did a probably 30% Golden Knights, 30% Stanley Cup playoffs, and like – you know, what's that leave? 40% for Bruce Springsteen. So that's how it played out. Yep.
You guys tried to out-project each other. Play-by-play guys. Who can
project
better?
Out of the room. Yeah, no, it was fun.
That's good.
Anyhow, we have Game 3 on deck here today. And I was thinking about this, Shane, not only watching Game 2, but just the Lightning and throughout this postseason. There are a couple of factors why things have gone differently this year as composed to last year for the Lightning. They seem to be, you add your Maroons and your Colemans and your Goodrows, not the big stars, you're adding, crunchier guys, so to speak. Copycat league, right? Whoever wins, that's what the trend then becomes. Do you see trends here, whether it's with Dallas or with Tampa, that might pique the interest of Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee to impact their decision-making here, whether it's trades, draft, free agency in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think you see how it plays out. I think one of the things that certainly affects it is they saw Dallas, what they didn't do well enough. What do they need? You evaluate that series more than anything and see what went wrong, what pieces, what areas did we need to be better to beat the Dallas Stars. I think they did a lot of really good things. You look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, they're more of a speed team. They've got the skill, like their power play is lethal. These Dallas teams, the Golden Knights aren't far off. Just like Tampa lost last year, as hard as it is, you can't bring the term panic in. You're right. They made a couple of tweaks, some changes to the lineup, but they didn't blow it apart because they lost in the first round of Columbus. They were still an excellent team. Still a favorite. And to win the Stanley Cup, I'm getting repetitive saying this, I honestly believe you don't win a Stanley Cup without previous year or even two of having some sort of major adversity you had to go through. So last year, Columbus, record regular season, out first round, boom. They've got to find.
Yeah.
Talk Dallas Stars, conference finals, double overtime, gone.
And then they changed the coach this year.
And changed the coach.
Which obviously the Golden Knights have done.
You go to the Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
They couldn't get by the Pittsburgh. They couldn't find their way being one of the best teams. The Boston Bruins, we won in 2011. I missed the previous season. Thank goodness. Up 3-0 on Philadelphia. Oof. Lose 4-3 in that series.
Yeah.
What you learned previously or what you overcome. It's either that or you need to overcome something big, which I think the biggest thing for the Tampa Bay Lightning was they overcoming that massive game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. That overtime game went 5 overtimes. Had they not won that, I don't think they'd be in this position.
It's almost like breaking the curse, getting the monkey off your back. And then
But yeah, there's going to be certain – but go back originally. Yes, they're going to find certain areas they want to get better with their team. But overall, I don't think the Golden Knights are in a position where there needs to be a lot of
– Yeah.
They're very close.
I'm with you because here's the other thing. If Joe Pavelski doesn't score a goal against Colorado with seconds left in whichever game that was.
Oh, it's Calgary.
Or Calgary, right. You know,
they would have been down 3-1.
Right. Dallas could have been knocked out in either the first or second round, and I'm not saying that they don't deserve to be where they are. They do. But a bounce here or something, you could easily have had the Golden Knights play against Calgary or Colorado in the conference final, and then all of these, let's just point out the obvious, they couldn't score, right? Maybe they could score a bunch against Colorado or Calgary, and then we're thinking about, oh, they could score a lot, but they couldn't defend. Meanwhile, they had terrific – they didn't allow anything. You know, so it just goes to show how really close this is. Yeah. If you get into the Final Four, you don't want to overreact.
No.
And so while in a condensed schedule, naturally the conversation in the next couple of weeks is going to be Fleury, Leonard, goaltending, condensed schedule, unprecedented 2021 season. But you hear a lot about Alex Pietrangelo, and it just
doesn't fit.
Like that doesn't
–
like you've got Shea Theodore. I mean, from a financial standpoint, not going to fit under the cap. Unless you do a lot of other stuff to deconstruct.
Well, first of all, financially, Shea Theodore. And then let's not forget, there was a young man who played so well. I don't know how he's not in the top four, and he's a right-handed shot in Zach Whitecloud.
Zach Whitecloud, for sure. And then you still got Alec Martinez.
Nate Schmidt plays on the right
side. You know. And by the way, Brayden McNabb, who's still, you know, he had signed a four-year deal during year one. So, like, and then you also, by the way, signed Nick Holden to a two-year extension. Then you've got the Nick Hagues and the Dylan Coghlan. Like, that is not an area, I think, where the Golden Knights need to spend any attention in the offseason.
Yeah.
Like, they're set, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there will be some expiring contracts up front, like with Stevenson, with Nosek, Cousins. You know, there might be some stuff there. But then you think the draft is coming up, and I know there will be a lot of Golden Knights draft coverage. But, you know,
They're right there.
Like they're you're talking about the draft. You're looking at how you might affect the team 3-4 years down the road. That's about it, Shane. Any thoughts on Game 3 tonight?
Oh, I'm just excited to see where this goes. I think it's going to be a long series.
Stamkos potentially returning for the Lightning. We'll see. Big thanks to Garrett Callaway. Big thanks to Jared Justice pushing all the right buttons behind the scenes. Big thanks to Mike Johnson, NHL analyst, joining us for this edition of Nighttime at Noon. Don't forget Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace later on today. Golden Knights Insider Show at 4. Tomorrow, Gary Lawless and Darren Millard in this time slot. For Shane Knighty, Dan Duva saying, on we go.